Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
In the South, it's always college football season, and the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Hour two, Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday. I tell football fans all the time, be eager, don't be anxious. There's a big difference, and we use those words interchangeably too often. And specifically, if you're just going to get anxious anyway, well, I'm a Vanderbilt fan. What do you want me to be? Don't get anxious in advance. Like, you don't have to be anxious or tense or you don't have to be worried about the season in April. Now, if there's a fan base that I would give license to that to, South Carolina. At least for the ticket sellers, I don't know, a home slate with LSU, Ole Miss, Texas A&M. Like, you can move those tickets. Missouri, you can move those tickets. But it's kind of a tough lineup. The road games, Bama, Oklahoma, Clemson. My gosh, ain't nothing going to be easy for South Carolina this year. Let's head out to the Duncan Newsmaker line right now from the Big Spur. It's a 247 effort. Hale McGranahan. Hale, welcome to the program. How you doing, pal?
Doing good, Chuck. And you didn't mention that Alabama and Oklahoma, those road games are back-to-back in October. So it should be a fun little stretch for the Gamecocks.
Yeah, and I'll get nervous for South Carolina fans come September. Let's talk spring because it's still practice and they got a scrimmage tomorrow. Let me ask you, just by curiosity, and maybe it's anecdotal, I don't know. I know Dabo's a big fan of letting quarterbacks be live, like for real live, like even Deshaun. Hey, you're live. You can hit him. Where is that line with the Gamecocks, especially when you've got, what, Robbie Ashford, a redshirt freshman, a fifth-year senior who hadn't played a lot? That's an adventure at quarterback.
Yeah, I asked Shane Beamer about that on Tuesday, and he was still undecided what that was going to look like. In the past, like last year, for example, they let all the quarterbacks but Spencer Rattler and Luke Doty, who was thought to be the backup going into the season, they were not live, but everybody else was, including Lenora Sellers, who's now potentially going to be the starter. So to be determined on who's going to be able to get hit tomorrow and who won't be, but that'll be something to keep in mind because Robbie Ashford, as some people might know, is a dual threat and probably want to get a feel for what he can do with his legs. And same with Lenora Sellers, he can run too. So that's certainly a storyline we're going to be tracking.
Give the vision. What do you think is the South Carolina offense vision for Lenora Sellers? What does it look like if it's right? The approach, the play calling, the et cetera.
I think maybe shades of what Arkansas did with KJ Jefferson. Perhaps a little QB run game and things of that nature. Obviously, they're going to want to throw the ball because Lenora does have a good arm, and we saw just in a few glimpses last year that he can push the ball down the field vertically. But I think it would be a little more QB run game, design runs, than what we've seen in the past in the last couple of years with Spencer Rattler.
The Big Spur, 247. You know, JC and the whole crew there. Got Hale McGranahan on. Appreciate his expertise today. All right, well, let's go to tailback or if we still call it tailback, I guess without a fullback, you don't. There's a lot of names, and there's a little something for everybody. A freshman, some returning guys, some transfers who are on the field, and then there's Rocket Sanders, who is not. Work me through the two deep or three deep or four deep as they are ahead of the scrimmage tomorrow.
Yeah, so Rocket's still coming off that shoulder injury he suffered last season at Arkansas. So he ain't doing anything this spring. Juju McDowell, who's one of the returning guys, a little scat back type of player who's been shut down for the spring. He suffered a collarbone injury about a week in. So at this point, it's a couple of transfers. Juwan Howell came in from South Carolina State as a second-year player, and Oscar Attaway, the third, who's from North Texas and is a senior, but he's got a couple years left to play. So it's kind of those two guys and some walk-ons who are in the mix right now. But Howell, it's going to be Howell and Attaway and probably once we get in the fall, once you're talking more about that, you'll be talking about those two guys with Rocket Sanders. But right now it's Howell and Attaway.
Okay, and when I ask about the quarterbacks, because that's always connected. Well, that's coach's philosophy, but it's also connected to there's so many layers to it. It's like, what does the depth chart look like? Is he a guy that needs that garbage? You know, is he an upperclassman who's played a lot? It's also the offensive line. And I don't think this is a stretch. Just tell me about bodies, numbers, health, because by the end of the season last year, it was, who do we got? All right, well, where do they fit? Well, just make them fit. Where are they right now? What's the projection, at least, for the coming season? Lord knows with the portal session still to be had.
Yeah, I think they're in a pretty good spot, Chuck. You know, they've recruited really well there these last couple cycles. And as most folks know, it's going to take a little time for offensive linemen to get developed and be ready to play. And they had to throw a couple guys into the fire last year, a couple true freshmen. And they feel like they're going to come out on the good end of things and really be better players here in year two now that both those guys get a spring. One true freshman they had last year who would have started potentially was injured, one of the many injuries they suffered. He's back and healthy, and they think he is picked up right where he left off. And they got several returning guys and went out and got some graduate transfers, guys with 1 year of eligibility left to come in and compete. So they've got a lot of bodies for sure and a mix of veterans from other places and veterans from South Carolina who've been here for 4 or 5 years. And some young guys, so it's they're kind of all across the board a little bit, but they've got some talent. If their best guys can stay healthy, which wasn't always the case last year, I think they're going to be better up front on the offensive line.
Was it news? Did it kind of resonate with South Carolina fans that Mike Shula's in the building now? Because I think it kind of should. That's a nice addition.
Yeah, I think it does a little bit, Chuck, because Columbia is about an hour and a half from Charlotte where the Panthers are, and there are a lot of Panthers fans who are South Carolina fans. So a lot of folks think fondly of some of those years he had with the Panthers working with Cam Newton. So I think a lot of people are pretty excited about it. The folks who really pay attention to the nuts and bolts of the operation, like analysts and GAs, you know, some people couldn't tell you who the running backs coach is, but some people could tell you who every analyst and GA on the staff is, and those who are pay real close attention to it and know who Mike Shula is, or they're pretty happy that he's on that staff and has a voice in that coaching's office.
Oh my gosh, absolutely! Like, if you care about this stuff, and some people don't, it's just a really, really good person. But beyond that, I mean, look at the quarterback and the work that he's done, and it's been for a few decades now. So that's a big advantage, and I hope South Carolina fans certainly appreciate that. All right, brother. Well, I appreciate the insight today. Thanks for making a few minutes coming on, man. Thank you.
Anytime. Appreciate y'all.
All right. The Big Spur again, J.C. Sherbert. That's his deal. Have he and Mike Morgan ever so often on the program. So appreciate Hale coming on today as well. Mike Shula, he obviously son of the Don, and played down at Columbus High School in Miami and then went to Alabama. He's a quarterback there in the mid-80s and played for Ray Perkins and had a couple of huge wins. Had a win in Athens the night they retired Herschel Walker's jersey. Threw a touchdown pass to Al Bell in the final seconds. He had his moments. He really did, and he was a good enough quarterback. He was a lefty, kind of a soft-tossing sort of, you know, accurate guy. Real smart. Okay, I'm hitting all of those notes, all right? That's what Mike Shula was, which is why I want to say, and I'm going to maybe get this wrong. I could look at, I have a computer. Okay, I'm touching a computer. It's not worth the effort. Might have been around an NFL camp for a minute, maybe the Buccaneers for some reason, but I do know he wound up coaching in Tampa because the quarterback was Vinny Testaverde, the Heisman winner. And I remember thinking, because I didn't really understand football at that point, Vinny Testaverde shows up as a Heisman winner and the first overall pick, and he looks at this short guy and says, what are you going to tell me about playing quarterback? Well, a whole lot, it turns out, because now we're pushing 40 years later, and Mike Shula is still out there influencing people how to play quarterback, whereas Vinny Testaverde was like 6'5", 230, and could play quarterback. Mike Shula kind of did everything he could. and then he became a coach, and I thought that he actually did a pretty good job in his lane. His lane was probably not head coach at Alabama, and that kind of bore out.
Yeah, I don't know if that's ever happened, where you have two guys drafted in the same draft class, and the guy who was the 12th round pick, the last of 20 picks by Tampa Bay that year, winds up coaching the guy who was number one. I'm not sure. I mean, you obviously can't have that now with a 12th round pick, but I'm not sure anything like that ever played out that way.
It just really is. But it's a commentary on two things. Being 6'5", 230 is better than being kind of the brainy athletic guy. And then the brainy guy who kind of got by on a little guile and playmaking and whatever else, he can turn into a pretty good coach. And so, again, he's had a paycheck for a long, long time. None of them included game checks from a Pro Bowl. None of them included a playoff share. None of them included that stuff. None of them include an NFL pension. All of that stuff for Vinny Testaverde. Vinny Testaverde right now on Friday, April 5th. Where is Vinny Testaverde? Somewhere with sand and water. That's what I'm going to guess. Mike Shula, on the other hand, still employed. Honest work and doing a good job. Spent much time in Columbia? I don't know if it's that way today. Columbia, somehow, it's a geographical oddity. Hottest place you'll find within like a 100-mile circle. North, west, winds blowing, dead away, doesn't matter. Whatever the temperature is other places, it's hotter in Columbia. All right? And so if that's where you are, you're employed, and it's better to be Vinny Testaverde right now. But it's good commentary on Mike Shula. And like I said, fans for South Carolina, you should be excited. This is an asset. Gosh, we break. We continue next.
Now back to the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Show continuing on this Friday, and we got a couple of spring games tomorrow scattered around. Then they crank up next weekend, and then even on the 20th. I've already given you the headlines. The last week of practice, there's probably going to be two practices, and then there will be a, for anyone whose game is on Saturday the 20th, you're probably going to have two practices after the 13th. Maybe you'll have a scrimmage on the 13th. And then the portal opens on April 16th, and you will probably have two practices and then your game. Somebody's losing players who hadn't played a spring game yet. That's going to happen. I already told you that. So that's what's ahead. But we are in spring season, and so when I say all week, all year, it's all college football, most of the time that's true. There is a phenomenon going on right now that you can't miss for whatever reason, and there are a lot of it, and boy, is it a spider web of reasons, and some of them organic, whatever, some of them not. But I have arrived at the opinion that for one 27-year-old, the most relevant example really might be Joe Namath. And if so, it's life-changing. The 27-year-old is the WNBA. And Caitlin Clark could be a modern-day version for that league on the scale that it can be the same thing of what Joe Namath did for the AFL. And, yes, there was the on-field slash court rink, whatever, product. And that was because of Joe Namath, partly because of him. The AFL was scoring more than the NFL, which makes it exciting. So higher TV ratings in certain markets. And so all of that is true. All that stuff's numbers. Do you know what Joe Namath really did? It was get the Jets, and this is the important part, folks. What Namath really did was get the Jets and every other AFL franchise into the National Football League. Every other time the established league has absorbed the upstart rival, it's absorbed some of those teams. Not all of them. Some of those teams, when the NHL, there was this thing called the World Hockey Association. And I think in maybe 1978 or 79, they put the WHA out of business, and they absorbed some of the teams. The Edmonton Oilers, for instance, got in. The Cincinnati Stingers did not. The Spurs and the Pacers, they got into the NBA. The Kentucky Colonels did not. And that happens like every time the established league says, okay, finally we will absorb, but some of you. The AFL made the bigger league yell uncle and take every last franchise, and the NFL really didn't want them all. Like, I don't know, say the Broncos. What? What do you mean, the Broncos? Yeah, the Denver Broncos, folks, they'd only existed 6 seasons when the merger was announced. 6 seasons. Were they good? No, they weren't even competitive. 1960, charter member of the American Football League, the next 6 seasons, Denver won a combined 22 games. Playing a schedule made up entirely of expansion teams. That's what gets less. They left out. They all were brand new, and they couldn't win. None of them had any players, coaches, equipment. Denver was really bad at all the things that helped you win. 6 seasons, 22 dubs. Yep, you're in the NFL. Why? In part because of Joe Namath. The Indiana franchise, are we aware of this? The Indiana Fever, they have the first overall pick. I see the future. It's Caitlin Clark. Like, can we bet on this? Because, folks, I remember being able to bet on the Heisman Trophy when Tim Tebow scored 50 touchdowns, and I was like, that's free money. And so there was a limit on it, but can I bet that Indiana takes Caitlin Clark? Heath, you know something about wagering.
I don't believe at this point that they're even offering a line, or if they do, it's basically all your money to get a dollar back because
versus the field.
The fact that the franchise has sent out posts saying things like 22 days until our draft pick, they haven't exactly been working hard to conceal this.
Yeah, they're just going to start shooting $1,000 bills out of the Xerox. Like, drafting her, that's what this is for the Indiana Fever. This will also be the sort of excitement for a visiting player coming to town. The folks, I can only remember, I'm in my 50s. I can remember seeing this a few times in my life. I am just old enough, and by a fluke, you know how popular Monday Night Football is? It certainly used to be. It was one of the entertainment and sports and television. It was an event. Do we know that there was this thing called Monday Night Baseball? It finally went away in like the mid-80s, I believe. ABC also had Monday Night Baseball. It was so unpopular with the teams that most stopped scheduling Monday night games. They would either schedule an off day or during the day. So you go look at the games that they got on Monday Night Football. They're the best games of the week. Monday Night Baseball, bleh. Well, the Detroit Tigers screwed up, and they left a game on Monday night against the Yankees, and ABC was like, we'll take that. YouTube your computer and watch the Mark Vidrich thing. Started that night. It was the first time in my life, 1976, Mark the Bird Friedrich going on the road. Fernando Mania. I will tell you, I went to an NBA game, I don't know when this was, 20 years ago, because I'd never seen a 7'6" person, much less one from China. I was like, all right, Yao Ming, I'm in. I'm going to a game specifically to see this guy. I was that person who started traveling like to a major league. Oh, Mark the Bird Fitzgerald is pitching. The Tigers are in town. There's been like four of those in my life. She's going to be that. She's going to be the show coming to your town, at least across the WNBA. It wouldn't surprise me if some of her road games, folks, do you know what already is being discussed? Some of her road games being moved to larger venues. We've got the cash cow coming to town twice this year. For instance, in Las Vegas, we're not playing in the showroom. We're playing in the big room now. And that's like a real thing in Las Vegas. It's going to have a similar-ish level of impact across every franchise in that league. Now, I have no idea about the duration of that. But this really appears to be an every game sold out thing, home, road, whatever. Another franchise has already stated she's increased their season ticket sales for next season because, I don't know, division or conference or league or what, like somehow they know they have extra games against Indiana. They said, we've already had people call and tell us, yeah, I'm buying season tickets because I want to see Caitlin Clark next year. It's just amazing.
Yeah, and look, I mean, this weekend, obviously, you've got the women's Final Four on Friday and Sunday to compare with the men on Saturday and Monday, and we'll see what the difference is in the numbers. But historically, it's enormous. We don't know who's going to win on Friday, but South Carolina is expected to beat NC State by Vegas, and UConn and Iowa is considered a little bit more of a toss-up. If, though, it is Caitlin Clark and Iowa against South Carolina on Sunday. So that would be, in that scenario, her trying to win the championship, South Carolina going for an undefeated season, and her being the only person in the last 3 years that's been able to beat South Carolina. They went undefeated the year before, undefeated until they weren't undefeated for the season. They were undefeated in calendar year the year before, then lost to her at the Final Four last year, undefeated all through the season this year. So she's the only person in three calendar years with a win over South Carolina basketball, and it was her, not Iowa, it's Caitlin Clark. They're saying, as an estimate, 16.9 million viewers, Chuck, for women's basketball on a Sunday. That is wild if that plays out that way. I mean, we're talking, you could add like the last four Final Four championships, and I'm not sure it adds up to 16.9 on the women's side.
It doesn't matter. It's Larry Bird at Indiana State. It's Kelly Leak. It's Benny Rodriguez. I mean, it's what it is.
And the question is, this is not going to be duplicated. There is not someone else who can be the next quote-unquote female Steph Curry. There's not one of those out there. There are other great women's basketball players, but you know, you just were talking about the Indiana Fever. Last year, somebody who had been player of the year was the number one pick and is on their team right now, and no one pays any attention to her. So, you know, you could be a fantastic player and you don't transcend. I will be curious to see. This is going to lift the boats. How much is it going to lift the boats? So, you know, next year's game will not do 16.9 million. Will it do 6.9 million, though? That would still be a giant jump forward for the sport. I'm curious long term what the Caitlin Clark effect for women's sports turns out to be.
That's why I said I can't tell you about the duration of it. I don't know that. But, folks, it's hard to overspeak. In fact, I don't know if you can overspeak because we underspoke on Monday. Wasn't the initial number like 7 million people watched the game?
Well, that was for the Sweet 16
game.
And so then, the fact it was 12 million for the Elite Eight game, that was a surprise. I think people were thinking like 9 or 10.
Absolutely.
12.
And so, you know, the projection coming off of the Sweet 16 game was, you know, maybe a little bit more bump because now there's actually bigger stakes at it. Folks, it was a huge leap. And the expected, I mean, the projection of, 15, 16 million? What if they're off on that one, too? I mean, the idea that a women's basketball, college basketball game is going to get 20, you don't even say those words, but you may.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Is there chaos in your closet?
Look, Blouse, you've got some nerve hanging there like that.
I can't help it. I'm jammed in here next to this suit.
Hey, I'm a three-piece, all right? Which means I need a little more room.
You've got a lot of attitude for a linen suit.
I'm a polyester blend, sweetheart. There needs to be room for men's clothes, too.
Hi, I'm Christina, and at Artisan Custom Closets, we help families organize and simplify their closets with customized storage solutions. See what's possible for your home at artisancustomclosets.com. And then call us for a free in-home consultation.
Catch the king of college football no matter where you go with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
So, round about 30 years ago, my coaching career, quote, started, and I had this stud on defense that was bigger and stronger than most folks, and we'd set him in a wide technique and say, see that guy with the single digit on his jersey? Just go hit him. Well, at a Class A high school in rural Alabama, when you're coaching for the Notasoga Blue Devils, that works. And, like, that works a lot. And you doesn't have to get a whole lot more sophisticated than that. It needs to be a little more than that in the SEC. And so when we all look at Hal Perkins and go, just set that kid loose. All right, that's partly true. But there has to be, like, some structure. At least the other 10 kids need to know it. But that's what everybody wants to talk about when it comes to the LSU defense. And they should. Guy's a stud. Want to welcome on right now, WAFB-TV, yonder in Baton Rouge. It is Jacques Doucet. Jacques, welcome back, brother. How you doing?
Chuck, great to be with you. I've been in Albany, New York, a lovely place covering LSU women's basketball, but I just got back in, and hopefully I've done enough research for you to be a good guest for you today because I enjoy your show here in Baton Rouge.
Oh, well, thank you, brother. I'm sure you'll be the expert we're after because I want to know what we're going to do with Harold Perkins. We're going to set that kid loose. There does have to be some sort of design and structure, but is Harold Perkins going to be a fast-forward sort of player or a drop-back sort of player?
Well, Blake Baker, the new defensive coordinator, says we've got to pick a spot and we've got to get him started and we've got to get him better. Now, apparently, they are leaning towards playing him on the inside again. It's interesting to look at his stats, and although I think a lot of fans feel like last year was so much more disappointing than his first year, the numbers were pretty similar. He had actually more tackles last year. He had the same amount of tackles for loss. He had two less sacks last year than he did a season ago, and he had one less forced fumble, and he had an interception in both years. But I feel like a lot of LSU fans felt like he was really not as effective as a year ago. And so when fans hear, okay, they're going to try to play him inside again, I think a few people get a little bit nervous about that. But I think we just have to trust Blake Baker, who's got a great history of developing linebackers and coaching linebackers. And it's funny, he obviously was on this staff with Ed Orgeron in 2021. He was not retained. He spent 2 years in Missouri and now has boomeranged his way back. And so some of the guys on this team right now, like Greg Penn III, he coached a couple of years ago. So, you know, that's why they're paying him the big bucks for that position, and just got to let him coach and play him the way he feels best.
Could we move up one line on the defense and talk about the tackles specifically? Because going back to, I don't know, like around the holidays or maybe New Year's or something, I'm like, all right, well, they got two guys coming back and there'll be some freshmen and there may be a transfer. And then I saw, I think, a fifth-year guy from Wisconsin showed up maybe last week or 2 weeks ago maybe. Whatever it was, they're kind of piecing together some depth. Tell me when they're going to add some more. And give me your view, your bird's eye, the defensive tackles specifically, because there's no getting around it in the SEC. Doesn't matter what else. If you're weak up the middle or don't have numbers, it's going to be a tough year.
Yeah, that's the spot that's got everyone nervous. They've been nervous about it. Our fans have been nervous about it since the bowl game, in which I think they had their fingers crossed that they could get Mekhi Wingo and Mason Smith to come back, and neither of those guys are coming back. And so you look at it, and you've got Jacoby and Guillory, who's going to be a fifth-year senior, a good kid, you know, a guy who's working hard, but he's got two tackles for loss in his career and half a sack in his quarterback in his career. Jalen Lee is a local kid, great parents. You're hoping that he really comes through this year. He played in 7 games last year, had 2 tackles, no tackles for loss, no sacks. And the young man they just got, Gio Paez from Wisconsin, I mean, he played in 13 games last year, had 22 tackles. So it appears he's a guy that perhaps they can plug in and get some reps out of. But I think that there's a fear that they're going to have to do some smoke and mirrors here to try to get around this defensive line spot, or at least, you know, minimize the problems there. April the 15th, when the transfer portal opens, that'll be a couple of days after LSU wraps up their spring and their spring game. All eyes there to see who they can find and who they can get, because they definitely, I don't think at this point, can roll into the season with what they've got right now and feel good about it.
All right. I do not dismiss the possibility that a freshman corner at a place like LSU can step in, and especially in man. It's kind of easy. See that guy? You're with him, whether it's Stingley, Ricks, you know, whoever. They've done it for years. PJ Woodland's a guy that I guess Baker was talking a little bit about, and so maybe start there. But tell me that the corners will be better. Tell me that the pass defense will be better, because it's been a real, real underachieving unit despite complete fruit basket turnover the past 2 seasons.
Well, Chuck, we went out to practice a week or two ago, and we're allowed to watch the entire practice. And Sage Ryan made 3 interceptions that day. You know, I think some of that is with the quarterback Nussmeier. He will fit it in there. Sometimes maybe he shouldn't fit it in there, and it'll be picked. I think that's something you're going to see next year. But a staffer – at that time told me, he said, man, we've intercepted more passes the last couple of days than we did all last year. Now, I don't know if that's just red meat throwing out to get people excited or whatnot, but I think Corey Raymond coming in after, you know, Corey played at LSU, yep, obviously, in the early 90s. He was a coach there for a decade, and then he was not retained either in 2021. Spent 2 years at Florida, which I think was just a funky thing. Corey Raymond doesn't need to be coaching at Florida. He needs to be at LSU. And so now he's back, and I think there's going to be a lot more bump and run, press, getting up in people's faces. As Jacob Hester, I think, joked on local radio, when the team scores a touchdown, I think at least an LSU defender will be in the video frame this year.
Yep.
So, the guy you talked about, P.J. Woodland, he's been described as a physical player who's got speed and length. He was a three-star coming out of Mississippi High School and was going up against Kyron Lacy in practice, who may be LSU's number one wide receiver. You've got guys like Ashton Stamps, Javian Taviano, J.K. Johnson. Zy Alexander was the young man who played at Southeastern University in Hammond who broke his leg last year, and who he will return. And Jairia Brown from Ohio State, he's in the mix as well. So I think there's a lot of young talent that needs to be developed. I think Coach Baker said they've had an up-and-down spring so far, and I guess that's what you would expect.
5 months ahead of the USC game, okay? So it's everything can get better and improve and whatever. But I do want to ask you about Nussmeier because you had referenced it there. I've said for a long time, my rule about quarterbacks, you're like a doctor. First rule, do no harm. I cannot have you turn the ball over. Is he just learning and flinging it and it's spring and, Chuck, it's April. They don't play till September. It's okay. Or is this a thing in Baton Rouge, like Garrett's loose with the football?
You know, he's always been kind of compared to Johnny Manziel or Brett Favre or one of those guys who likes to run around and sling it. And great things have happened, and sometimes great things have not happened. I don't think he likes the gunslinger role. He's never really, liked that a whole lot. He is a great mystery to an extent. He's been here for 3 years, and he's only started one game, and that was the bowl game he just played against Wisconsin. Threw for almost 400 yards, and I think the most important thing was his team was losing. He was at his own goal line 98 yards away and drove his team all the way down the field for the game-winning touchdown. Now, this year, obviously, he won't be throwing to Malik Nabers or Brian Thomas. Those guys are going to be first-round draft picks. How much can Kyron Lacy step up? How much can Mason Smith at the tight end position be a force as well? They've gotten some good guys out of the transfer portal. A guy like C.J. Daniels, who at Liberty was over 1,000 yards, but you're not playing against Sam Houston State and New Mexico State anymore. You got to, how will that translate to the SEC? So, they brought in an A.J. Swan from Vanderbilt to compete with Nussmeier a little bit, but, that is not a Jayden Daniels type situation. I don't think anyone expects him to beat Nussmeier out, but I guess it gives him a good spare tire, in case Nussmeier has to miss some time for whatever reason, some experience. But Ricky Collins from here in Baton Rouge would have something to say about that, too. He wants to be the backup as well. So, yeah, we'll see with Garrett. Chuck, you're not going to – a big question, I think, is how much in a 9-3 season did Jayden Daniels prevent these guys from not being, 6-6, 5-7? Because, a 3rd-and-15, a guy that can run 60, 70, 80 yards for a touchdown, that element will not be there this year. It's going to be more from the pocket. It's going to be more about Garrett Nussmeier's big arm, and we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, during the season, I remember thinking that I was like, how much is he making up for? And then the Alabama game happened and Dallas Turner did his thing, and I was like, all right, that's checkmate. Like, as soon as that happened, I was like, they have no chance now. And they had a chance they could win the game before that, and then it was gone. Last thing I want to ask you is, as we head towards the off season and ahead of August and all that, fans are going to have some chance. Like, there's opportunity to grab people's eyeballs here because there's nothing really going on outside of baseball. What is going to be the next story, the next chapter, the next whatever with Kim Mulkey and the women's basketball program? Which, by the way, the fact that I'm asking you this is a big, giant win for the sport. I've always said a black hat or somebody who's provocative or whatever, but, like, I'm really interested. What happens next and her attorney and the Post and whatever else? What's ground zero there?
Yeah, Chuck, I've been here 23 years, and I've kept up with LSU sports since the late 80s. And, we're talking Joe Burrow, Nick Saban, Ed Orgeron, Les Miles, Tyrann Mathieu, Leonard Fournette, Lolo Jones, all these amazing people that I've had the chance to cover over the years. And I don't think anyone has ever moved the needle like Kim Mulkey. I mean, people who don't like her, watch her. People that do like her, watch her. Young, old, white, black, whatever. Kim Mulkey, on my Facebook post, on my Twitter, X post, whatever you want to call it. I mean, I don't know of anyone who's ever gotten more attention and moves the needle like she does. So I think that the Washington Post thing, I don't think she's going to sue them, if I would guess. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It was funny. All the attention went to that, and then it was the Los Angeles Times story with the dirty debutante and all that. That was really the worst of the two stories, and nobody knew about that until it came out that day. So I think she's going to try to get 5 or 6 new players in the transfer portal, and I think they're going to have 12,000 people a night watching them play next year, and they'll be in the top 10, top 5 again. So.
Yeah, and when I say I don't understand her, you know, why wouldn't people like her? It's kind of like, you know, I was a NASCAR fan big time about 10, 12, 15 years ago, and I was a big Kyle Busch fan, and he was great at the sport, but he was also one of those people that folks looked at and said, I don't like him. And it's the same sort of thing. You kind of have to ascend to that level before people are even going to notice you and have an opinion. So that's where it is. Brother, I appreciate your time today. Thank you so much.
All right, Chuck, enjoyed it. Take care.
Jack Doucet, sports director, WAFB. Been there 20-plus years. He's got Emmys. So does the job well. Ain't no doubt about it. So you've got to be noticed before we're going to have an opinion about you. And I don't know if you go back and look, because this was around 2008, 2009. I got back into NASCAR. And I can't tell. I don't know. Denny Hamlin, Martin Truex, like Kyle Petty was still running at that point. I don't think he had a sponsor. Like he would start and he would run like, I don't know, about a dozen laps or so. And then he'd pull into the garage and it would work out financially. And then he'd go to the next week without a sponsor. And so he'd kind of work there. You know what never happened? Somebody started a sports talk discussion with, I hate Kyle Petty. Kyle Busch? Yeah, sure. Kim Mulkey? Yes. I don't think anyone has started any sports talk discussion in the history of forever with, I hate the Vanderbilt women's basketball coach. I don't know. Heath, I'll buy you lunch today if you can tell me who the Vanderbilt women's coach is.
I don't think off the top of my head I know.
There you go. LSU, folks. People who've never actually watched an LSU game, oh, I don't like her. I'm like, how do you know that? Maybe you don't like her because she sang Jim Croce in a post-game press conference. If you're not aware, you don't mess around with Kim.
Shea Ralph, by the way. I should have actually known that. That's a familiar name. Shea Ralph, the women's coach at Vanderbilt. But it was not springing to mind.
Fail! So Kim Mulkey is someone that everyone knows and has an opinion about, and I mean a strong opinion. It's not 40 to 60. It's like 0 to 10 or 90 to 100. I think I'm down there by about the 90. And if she's wearing that green, it's probably like 92, 93. Like, I'm a big fan of Kim Mulkey.
Well, look, if you choose to dress the way she does, I mean, and some of her outfits are flashier than others, but she's someone who clearly wants you to pay attention,
yes,
to what she's doing on the sidelines. And so, you know, some of those outfits look like Cruella DeVille, and some of them look like they're going to walk the, you know, walk the Milan runway or something. But she's always got an outfit, and she
produces.
She knows how to get attention, and yeah, she's won. She's won at Baylor. Anybody who wins at Baylor, Chuck, I'm always impressed by, because there is no logical reason anyone should ever win at a Baptist university in Waco, Texas, in any sport. There's just no logical reason that should ever be the best place in America at anything when it comes to sports. That is a, if you were going to construct, how do we lure the best athletes here, Baptist University, Waco, Texas, would not be a formula anybody would come up with. So if you can build something and win there, hey, you've got my respect for that.
Hour and 45 minutes of quality radio, and now I am plus a sandwich. So lunch on Heath, that's up next, as well as we'll wrap up the show.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
I do believe in Peyton as a person, number one. as a leader. Certainly, he's got to earn what comes his way. I believe that for everybody. And do I believe he can become better in our system? Yes. But I do think it takes people around him too. And you know, he was pretty dang good when he had those two NFL receivers.
Michigan State. That is Hugh Freeze, Auburn head coach. And yeah, Keon Coleman, that helps. Hugh Freeze, Auburn head coach, talking about Peyton Thorne, his number one quarterback, pole position, I believe he'd used that phrase. And I shudder to think what would happen in a spring game for that to change. You would have to have a transformational sort of performance by Hank Brown, or one of the freshmen there, Walker White. I guess he could have the Walker Howard sort of spring where it was 12 of 13, I believe, and then he was third or fourth string during the season. So spring is what it is. And you can kind of, I don't want to say script success, but you can kind of nudge a kid in spring, but not just by calling plays. In the game, you can work a quarterback towards what he does well. Lane Kiffin is a master at that. Did it at Alabama, done it at a bunch of places. In a spring game, you can kind of put your thumb on the scale because you're also calling the defense. You're also setting up the defense. And so if you've got somebody that you want to have kind of some success and a warm fuzzy, so, I mean, I shudder to think how bad he would have to play. And I don't think he has it in him. Like, he's it's not possible. This is a big shift from Hugh Freeze post-bowl game to Hugh Freeze pre-spring game. And I think there was an internal with Peyton, I think a sort of a come-to-football Jesus with himself, and I bet you he was the first guy at the January 4th workout or whatever it was. I promise you, he was banging on doors with sausage biscuits for all the offensive linemen. I promise. What's up, Heath?
A couple of things. One, you know, I don't know for sure, but there's at least a chance I may go over there and check out that Auburn spring game this weekend. We're at least considering it. You know, not gonna go by myself.
So, country's barbecue.
Yeah, if the wife has other plans, then you know we'll see. But she's at least interested in the possibility. And I'll tell you, Chuck, yeah, it's not quite on the level of transformational talent yet that you're talking about there with Caitlin Clark earlier in the program. But I just want to see Cam Coleman, and I don't know if I'm gonna have a chance to make it over to an Auburn game during the fall. So you just listen to what they're saying about him, what they said about him in recruiting, what they're saying about him on the field. I just kind of want to get a look at this guy because they're making him sound like some kind of combo of Julio Jones and Randy Moss, the best parts of both.
Absolutely
and,
true.
If he's that good, then I figure, hey, I might as well go ahead and get some eyes on him. So
and part
we'll
of
see.
That's been, it's not just Hugh Freeze pumping up a freshman. It's been the other wide receivers who he may take snaps from going, wow, that guy's good.
Well, yeah, and observers that practice. I mean, everybody seems to agree. Now, again, spring practice versus doing it in a game against somebody who's trying to take your head off is a different proposition. But I kind of want to get a look at this kid, so I might go over there. If I wanted to go to another spring game, though, Chuck, it's pretty lean pickings this weekend. There's exactly one other place in the SEC or the ACC I could go to a spring game if I wanted to. And your winner of your really awful timing award is NC State. You've got the men and the women both
Buzzard's
in the Final
luck.
Four. And that is a Muschamp move. That has happened before at South Carolina in 2017. Will Muschamp had his team doing their spring game on the day of the men in the Final Four, and the weekend the women were also playing in the Final Four. You could anticipate that maybe a little better, at least for the women at South Carolina. You couldn't have anticipated for the men. But Doran, there's no way he could have possibly anticipated that the men were supposed to fire their head coach, and 3 weeks later they're in the Final Four. But over-under on attendance.
It's almost comical that school, like, are we really a candidate for the men's Final Four?
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
40. Over-under on attendance, though, for that game, Chuck. What are we thinking? 1,500? I have been, by the way, to a North Carolina State spring game, so I can tell you, normal game, about 10,000 in the stands, 8,000 to 10,000 if the weather's
they're busy.
Okay.
They're busy.
Over under on 1,500, I'm going under.
Yeah, because who goes to the spring game? You know what it is? It's season ticket holders, and in a lot of cases, why are you going? Sure, you want to see whatever early enrollee. Here's why you go, because it's been just about as long since you've been on campus, since you'll be on campus again.
and you want to see the people that you sit next to for those seven Saturdays or whatever. It's your chance in April when you hadn't seen them since November. They're not going to be there, folks. Like, the most well-heeled, like, they've got a couple of choices. The folks with the bucks, the folks, folks who care, that they've got hoops this weekend, I promise you. So
people are selling their kidneys if they need to get to Arizona for that men's game. I assure you.
Yes.
They will be out there for that.
There's something about harkening back to, oh, I remember, and I was in eighth grade and whatever else, Jim Balvano and Hungry Like the Wolf and all that. And so, and it's men's basketball and they're NC State, plus that connection. So all that's true. All right, wraps it up on a Friday, wraps it up for the weekend. David, Heath, everybody, a couple of days to recharge the batteries. Back on Monday with more.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at atlantaramjack.com.